And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Well, good afternoon, America. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Good to be back home in the studio, though I did enjoy the Take Back America conference, and I got a lot of interviews that were recorded there that I'll be playing on the horn over the next week or so. You can't always get everyone to come during your particular live hour, so I really had a bunch of really great interviews. Probably my favorite, I don't know, is Phil Donahue. I've always liked Phil Donahue. He's just, I don't know, man of the people. Maybe it's because I want to have a talk show where I get to run down the aisles with my microphone. What do you think? Man after my own heart. We're going to play some of that. Really terrific interviews I had with Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, Congressman John Conyers. Congresswoman Schakowsky, I don't even know if you know who she is. She's a congresswoman from Illinois. She's been there forever. She's always a leader on progressive causes, but a smart leader, not a stupid one. Sorry, Cynthia McKinney. No, but someone who builds coalitions and doesn't frighten people, someone who's always on the right stand of the issue. And, we'll play my interview with her. I was just telling Bob Kincaid before I got on the air, you know, Paul Wellstone is dead, and everyone needs some hero in Congress. I have now anointed a new one, and that is Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky. Long may she live. Long may she reign. So we'll be playing some of those next week. Also, there's a ton of things going on in the news. If you heard the Barack Obama speech, as I just did today, I missed it yesterday because, you know, I was at this conference. Oh, man, I just watched it today, and I savored it, which is weird because it was a tough topic. I mean, dealing with race and racial resentment and whites and blacks, and I savored it. He did everything. He did everything. This was a really hard thing to do. We shouldn't ever discount how hard it was to do what Barack Obama did. I'm going to talk in detail about the entire speech tomorrow. We'll spend the entire hour on it. But he really was able to speak to African-American resentments, white resentments, and at the same time say things that would pull us together. As I said, there's a lot going on. There's the D.C. gun ban, talking about the Second Amendment, which it sounds like the Supreme Court is about to overturn. In other words, talking not about militias, which is what the Second Amendment talks about. I'll get to that, and I also got to get to John McCain messing up, trying to figure out who Al-Qaeda is. This is supposed to be the guy who knows everything about the Middle East. But today I'm not going to talk about any of that stuff. I'm going to talk about poker. Poker, you say? What does poker have to do with Obama and McCain and the D.C. gun law? Absolutely nothing. But what poker does have to do with is the way that Republicans and Republican-style theological government is steadily encroaching on our individual freedom. Whenever you study conservatives and liberals, Republicans, conservatives will be the first to say they want the government out of our lives. They want us to have as much freedom as possible. And yet, what you may not know is that they're constantly watching over us with the nanny state. It's not just drug laws. It's not just anti-abortion laws or anti-birth control laws. It's not just prayer in schools. It's not just that. They don't want us to have fun. It's not that Republicans hate sex. They hate fun. And one of the most concrete examples of that, I think, was when they banned internet poker just a couple years ago. Now, if you don't play poker online, you may have no idea what I'm talking about. The legislation got very little press. But I worked on the Judiciary Committee. I worked for Congressman Barney Frank. And as a good liberal, he was a good libertarian. As Barney Frank says, people have a right to be stupid. And I'll be the first to tell you that if you bet your home on a poker match, you're stupid. There's a lot of luck in poker. A lot of skill, too, but a lot of luck. But what was I doing? I was online. I was playing dollar games. Every now and then, I would play a $5 game. This was, yes, within my means. Yes, it was fun. I played with people all over the globe. And I wasn't harming nobody. Well, apparently, I did a bad thing. I was sinning. And now what I'm doing is against the law. And it's really, really a shame. To talk about internet poker and really just the great game of poker, which is something I still do. It's legal, by the way. I play in my own home with my friends. Yes, it was fun playing online. Republicans won't let me do that anymore, but I do play with my friends about once a week, Texas Hold'em tournament style, if you know what I'm talking about. And one man who does certainly know what I'm talking about is Jay Lakin. Jay Lakin is the founder of PokerSourceOnline.com, one of those internet sites that, let's just face it, the Republicans think is destroying America. Jay Lakin, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you very much for having me. And I just wanted to clarify, if I could, that PokerSource Online is not a poker site. It's actually a poker affiliate site. We are more informational.
Okay, that's right. Actually, I've been to your site, and you link to other sites.
You know that you can't gamble on PokerSource Online.
Well, and the other thing that I think should be clear is that those poker sites that are available, you can still gamble for free. I mean, you can play for points, things like that. And actually, as I understand the law, and I looked at it carefully before I went and did this because I'm a lawyer and I don't want to get in trouble, is that actually you just can't put money into those sites. In other words, if you have money there, my reading of the law, loopholes and all, is you could still play with it until you lose it all. But then you can't put any more
correct, Mark.
Money in. So,
that's
Jay,
exactly correct. The UIGEA banned the transfer of funds. It has nothing to do with the banning of online poker. In fact, no one in America has ever been arrested, charged, jailed for playing online poker.
Has anyone been arrested or jailed for transferring funds to these poker sites?
Or for sports betting?
Well, let me ask you, has anyone gotten in trouble so far? And I'm not recommending people do it because I can't recommend people break the law, even though I think it's the stupidest law in the world. But has anyone been punished so far under this law?
Well, yes, everyone in America has been punished.
Well, I'm punished because I can't play anymore. But I mean, I'm just curious if there have been any criminal or fines.
Yeah, you have to realize that the UIGEA isn't a punishment law. It's a lack of ability law. I mean, it's basically saying to the banks, it is now your problem. It is now your responsibility to make sure that no funds of any kind leave your financial institution and wind up in an online poker site's bank account.
Well, Jay, does that mean that if I can figure out...
Everyone that wants to play online poker in America is being punished by this law because try to fund your online poker account in the USA. It's almost impossible.
Well, let me ask you, Jay, because, you know, I'm a pretty wily kind of guy. If I can figure out a way to get my money to these sites... Again, I'm not about protecting the banks. I'm not about protecting Mark Levine. If I can get my money to them, can I be punished? Because I thought
no.
I could, and that's why I stopped my wonderful little addiction
no,
that I love
no,
so much.
There is no law in the U.S. There are a couple of states, Mark. There are about a dozen or so states. I'm not even sure if it's that many. That
I live in Virginia.
Have laws. Oh, you're good in Virginia.
Oh, good.
Northern Virginia?
Yeah.
Okay.
Near Washington, of course. That's
right. That's where I was born and raised, so I know the area well.
Great.
There are a handful of states that have laws directly targeted to online wagering. But again, let me stress, no one in America has ever been charged, jailed, fined, reprimanded, anything for playing poker on their laptop.
Could I be, Jay?
Well, I mean, you know, Mark, if you want to get technical, you know, you can get arrested, you know, for throwing a piece of paper out your car window. You can be arrested for walking against a traffic light. You know, show me somebody that has.
That is true. My problem is it's just I'm a lawyer and I feel like I gotta obey even I don't know. I speed all the time. I mean, let's admit it. I confess I'm an inveterate traffic offender. I often go over the speed limit, and I do so knowingly and intentionally. So, I do break some laws, but I got to admit, this one has scared me. I used to play poker online all the time. I love poker. I love Texas Hold'em. I started, I think, like so many Americans, when they started putting it on TV, on ESPN, showing everybody's cards when people were bluffing. And, you know, I used to play poker. I got to tell you, when I was a kid, we would play poker about once a week in high school. And everyone would come around my house. No, we didn't play Texas Hold'em. We played everything. Oh, my God, the games we played. Anaconda 3-2-1 high-low and Follow the Queen and baseball. Right. And we had times when it seemed like every other card in the deck was wild. And if you didn't have five aces, you weren't going to win. And Pass the Trash.
We used to play Dr. Pepper.
Nah, fours and sevens and tens or something.
No, you're not old enough to remember the old Dr. Pepper bottle.
Twos and sixes and tens. I don't remember what there was. I know it was a clock.
It was 10, 2, and 4.
Ten, two, and four. I was close.
The old Dr. Pepper bottle, and if you Google it, you'll see it had this circle on it, and it had the numbers 10, 2, and 4. And so, if you played Dr. Pepper, 10, 2s, and 4s were wild.
Which is really stupid, I got to tell you, because then every card's wild, and then if you don't have three wild cards, you can't win.
We were like 7, 8, 9 years old, so you know.
Right? No, I know. There's five card draw and five card stud.
And, you know, nine aces beat eight aces. You know what can I tell you?
You know, my dad still plays. He has been playing with the same group of men since I was a little boy, and they're all a lot older. And they play. My father, who's, you know, he's not a poor man, but they play for nickel ante and quarter high bet, which means that on a really, really good night, my father can take home in excess of $5. And that was the stake 30 years ago.
You can do the same thing online, Mark. I mean, you can go to any online poker site, and you can find a 1 cent, 2 cent table.
That's true. And I played on them.
What the DEA has done is they've made it impossible for you and I and anyone else in the U.S. that wants to play 1 cent, 2 cent poker on their computer, you know, in the middle of the night, they can't sleep, or they're in the
right.
middle of nowhere, or
I did that.
In, or they have no friends. I mean,
right.
That's what the computer is. That's what the laptop's all about. You can stay in your house and you can be friends with people all over the world. Well, the UIGEA prohibited the transfer of funds from your bank to that online poker site, but it carved out fantasy sports, online lotteries, and horse racing, basically stating to the American public that we don't want you losing 5 or 10 or 20 cents by playing poker, but you can drop $1,000 on Seabiscuit in the Fifth at Aqueduct, and we have no problem with it.
And you know why, Jay, that is, don't you? You know why that was done?
Yes.
It's done. Mitch McConnell is the Republican majority leader. He happens to be from the state of Kentucky. If you've heard of the Kentucky Derby, you know how important horse racing is to that state.
It goes much further than that. The bottom line is that the online horse racing folks, the guys that have the racetracks in America that also let people wager on these races online, have an association in D.C., as you're well aware of. They have lobbyists on K Street, which you're well aware
Absolutely.
Of.
Absolutely.
And the online poker rooms don't have anybody. The online poker rooms weren't even in the U.S. The online poker rooms are in Malta. They're in Israel. They're in Australia. They're in the U.K. They're in Isle of Man. They're in Canada. They don't know from K Street lobbyists.
I'll tell you this, Jay. I'll tell you this.
It's of politicians. They don't know about putting guys on a plane and sending them to Scotland for a golf game. I mean, that's how these guys got carved out.
I'll tell you this, Jay. I do remember when we were debating this bill, and while I was there, my boss, Barney Frank, was very, very much opposed to this bill and still is. It's funny because he's known for all kinds of things. He's known for, you know, housing the poor and civil rights and things like that. A lot of people don't know that he's your poker buddy's greatest friend. I think a lot of people in the poker world might be surprised. But we really led the charge on this.
I actually think, Mark, that most people in the poker world know that Barney Frank is their best friend. I mean,
Barney Frank is the guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Most folks in the online poker community know that Barney is the one who's, you know, leading the charge to get the UIGEA overturned or rewritten or abolished or, replaced with his law, which he...
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
I think he's going to be speaking about in April, in fact.
I'm glad to hear it. When I was there, which was 01 to 03, as his counsel, we did every trick in the book to prevent them from doing this bill, and we came very close, but we managed to defeat it each time. And then they did a really squirrely thing, which is legal but still squirrely, where, you know, they put the bill in a larger bill that everyone says has to pass, and they snuck it in that way. But here's, I guess, what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, people play, as you say, can play for 5 cents, can play for 10 cents. I'll be the first to tell you that if you play poker online, I still play poker online, folks. I play for these points, these free points. But the problem is it's bad poker. When people are playing for points and not money, even when it's a buck and they can lose the buck, they're a little more conservative, I guess is the right word, when they play. When they're just playing for points, if you know poker, they'll go all in, they'll put all their chips in, and what do they care? It's just points. It's a better game when you got a little bit of money there.
Well, of course.
Is that your experience?
I mean, it's like when you're a little kid and, you know, you're playing make-believe.
It's not a real poker game.
That's what you're doing. I mean, you're playing make believe. I mean, obviously, if you're playing make believe and somebody gets dealt a 2-3, they're gonna, you know, go all in because
sure.
It's like what's the difference?
Because there's no consequence. But I know that when I play in my home game, you know, I fold the 2-3. You know, I because I don't want to lose all my chips, and it's not even about the $10 I play for at home, but the fact that I got to wait, a couple hours before the game's over, and I get to get back in again. So
exactly.
I'm gonna play better poker that way.
I mean that's another advantage to online poker. I mean, in the case of PokerStars, for instance, at any given moment, there's 125,000 people online. I mean, you can go
right.
to PokerStars any day, any time, and you can find any game you want. And if you get knocked out of a 1 cent, 2 cent game, or you're feeling unlucky at that table, go to another one.
And there are thousands of them.
Well,
I used to play it at Ultimate Bet, but there's a bunch of different poker places. I'll tell you this though: when you said that,
let me enumerate them for your listeners in the U.S.
Okay.
Because there are only a handful of sites actually that you can play on in the U.S. that still accept U.S. players that will not block you per your IP address. That would be
wow.
Absolute Poker. It would be Poker Stars. It would be Full Tilt. It would be Ultimate Bet. Carbon Poker takes U.S. players. Doyle's Room, once again, is taking U.S. players. That's about it. I mean, there's only a handful. Oh, Bodog. Bodog is a pretty good site. They take U.S. players.
So six or seven. I'll tell you, when you said that there wasn't anyone that had K Street lobbyists on the Hill from Malta or Israel, I'll tell you this. There was, and I remember this very clearly, working for Barney Frank, there was an outfit. I don't remember what it was. Maybe you do remember. It was from the U.K., from Great Britain. And they came in and they argued, look, if the problem that you're worried about, because this is the problem that all Good, who was the big guy, congressman from Virginia, Republican, who was really pushing
yeah,
this
good,
bill.
Goodlatte.
Right, Goodlatte, right. And he,
yeah,
Virgil
Bob,
Goodlatte.
Bob Goodlatte. He's your congressman.
No, he's not. No, he's not. I'm from Northern Virginia. He's from
oh, okay.
Southwest Virginia.
That's
please.
Right. Okay.
Don't blame me for him. No, but he was going around and he was saying, look, this money can go to terrorist sites and we have to be careful about money laundering and all this. So this British company came in and said, look, we'll even accept taxation. Come in, watch us, regulate us, watch where our money's going. In fact, if you regulate us, we want you to regulate us, and I'll tell you why, this company said. We run an honest poker site. When you're online, there's fear, as there should be, that maybe the house is tricking you, right? Maybe the house, the people in Malta, are putting a guy next to you who's always getting aces, and therefore will always win your money, because let's face it, poker is skill, but it's also a heck of a lot of luck. And it is a fear when you're dealing with people you don't know that maybe they're cheating. So this British company came in and said, look, you can come in, you can regulate us, you can even tax us a little, we'll help your economy, and this way you'll be sure none of the funds are going to terrorists, and we make sure that everything's honest, and we think we'll get more players because the players will know that we're an honest site. To which point Goodlatte said, no deal, we just think it's a sin. Pretty
yeah, well,
much.
That's the bottom line. I mean, Goodlatte was basically saying one thing, but you know he was meaning something totally different. I mean, it's the same thing with Bill Frist and John Connell. I mean, they're all a bunch of hypocrites. I mean, Bill Frist thought he was going to use this as a springboard to the presidency. John Connell almost lost re-election from somebody nobody ever heard of in Arizona over this. The bottom line, Mark, is that, again, you can't be a Bob Goodlatte or a Jim Leach or a Frist or a Kyle and say that, you know, we're doing this for your own good. We're doing this because we're looking out for you, and then carve out fantasy sports, online lotteries, and horse racing. You know, you can't say that this kind of gambling is bad and this kind of gambling is good. I mean, the last time I went into a liquor store, I was able to buy vodka and bourbon.
Right. I mean, you could ban one and not the other because the bourbon pays for your industry or your campaign and the vodka doesn't, but that wouldn't make any sense. Let me ask you this.
The bottom line is that you drive through America and you see billboards for the Powerball, and you go up to the 7-Eleven and you see signage everywhere for the state lottery, and you turn on the television and you see all the different gambling commercials. You know, the bottom line is that gambling is prevalent in the U.S. You're not going to get rid of it. It's too late. The genie's out of the bottle. But you can regulate it, as you were mentioning, as Barney Frank and others would like to do, as they do with online lotteries and horse racing.
And the way they do with casinos in Las Vegas. They're regulated. They're very, very carefully watched by the Nevada Game Board to make sure they're fair, as they should be. And I assume you don't have any problem with that.
No. In fact, my only problem with the UIGEA is get rid of all of it or allow all of it. Don't tell me that I can gamble here, but I can't gamble here. Don't tell me that
I can
buy a bottle of vodka.
But I was just going to say, as an American, I'm uniquely offended, and I'm going to tell you why. Poker is about the most American game around. You know, when you look at horse racing, they had that in Great Britain. The lottery, that's ancient. That goes back to ancient times. But poker is an American game, right? I mean, it comes from the Wild West. I mean, there's even a dead man's hand. They talk about what you're holding. I think aces and eights. Correct me if I'm wrong. Poker has a whole history, an American history. Am I right?
Agreed. I mean, again, it's not the poker. I think it's the whole idea of gambling. You know, these Republican, you know, righteous zealots, holier than thou's, think that they know what's better for you than you do. You know, I thought the Republican Party was all about smaller government and you know, staying out of your business, but that isn't how it is.
Is it theocracy? Is it religion? Is it preachers telling people that poker is a sin along with dancing and drinking? I mean, is that what's causing this?
That's exactly what I think it is. I think guys like Good Latin Frist think that they know what's better for you than you do, and they're going to get rid of this stuff so that you're not tempted, so you won't go to hell.
Let me ask you this, because obviously gambling can be a problem, just like excess drinking or other things. Bill Bennett, another Republican icon who wrote the Book of Virtues, dropped, $8 million.
Another hypocrite.
Dropped $8 million in a casino on gambling. Slot machines?
Yeah, he was playing $100 a pull slot machines.
You're kidding. He lost $8 million on slot
machines? It's all about do what I say, not as I do. I mean, here's the guy that was being held up as Mr. Virtue, you know, Mr. Do the Right Thing, Mr. This is how you should live your life. And in the meantime, he's going into casinos in the back rooms, in the private rooms, dropping thousands of dollars a pull on slot machines and losing millions of dollars. And his response to that is, hey, I can afford to lose it. Okay, so what?
Yes, selling his virtues, saying how moral he is. That's how he gets his money.
If you can afford to lose it, it's okay.
First of all, I got to say, I don't mean to attack all you people who like slots out there. This is America. If you like slots, you go for it. But I'm just going to show a little bit of arrogance here and say slots is a game of chance. Poker is not only chance, but there's a lot of skill in poker. So I'm sorry, slot lovers, but I got more respect for poker players. You're probably not going to go on a limb like that as I just did.
Well, actually, you know, my mom likes to sit down and...
My mom does too.
...with a roll of pennies. I mean, some people don't have the wherewithal to play poker. I mean, poker, as you said, is a game of skill, and it's also, you know, a game that you have to use your brain. And you know, you have to know about math and you have to know about bluffing. And there are a lot of people that just want to sit and pull a handle. You know,
yeah,
their
that's,
enjoyment
that's boring
is sitting
to me,
and pulling
but
a handle. I mean, I don't
they have
like
a right to do
beans,
that, too.
But I'm sure there are a lot of people that do.
Well, they have a right to do that. Let me ask you, because I love poker, and I am a regular poker player. Jay, what do you like about the game? What to you is the most exciting moment? I think I forgot who was the poker expert that said that poker is hours of sheer boredom punctuated by moments of sheer terror or something like that.
That's a good line. I gotta be honest with you, Mark. As the owner of Poker Source Online, and because my life basically revolves around poker, I rarely, if ever, play it.
That's terrible.
It's now my job. It's now what I do. I mean, the last time I played poker, I was forced into it. I was in the Bahamas at the Poker Stars, whatever that event was that they held down there in January, and they asked me to play in the affiliate poker match, and I resisted, but they insisted, and since they had paid for me to come down, were paying for my room, etc., I thought, okay, I guess I better play in this. So I'm sitting, and it started out with about 30 or 40 affiliates, got down to the final table. I was still in it. I was sitting
Congratulations.
At the final table. I'm sorry?
I think congratulations. That's tough. There are probably a bunch of good players.
Yeah, but I was playing, you know, very tight.
Uh-huh.
So explain
to our listeners what that means. They may not know what playing tight.
I was playing very cautiously and folding just about everything I got.
Right.
So I get down to the final table. I'm up against Daniel Legrano and Greg.
Wow. Oh, wow. Now, hold on. I got to explain to people who these people are. If you follow poker, these are Greg Raymer is the winner of the World Series of Poker, I think, 2 years ago, maybe three. And Daniel Negreanu, I think, personally is the best poker player in the world.
Well, I gotta admit, after having met him and seen what he can do, I mean, I was sitting at an earlier table with Daniel, and people would say, "What do I have? What are my cards?" And he without even the flop coming up, he was able to tell them what their cards were, and he was right at least, he was right 100% of the time on at least one of the two cards.
That's amazing. Now, just so you know, people know, because they may not know, there's a lot of lingo in poker, and it makes it sound more complicated than it is. It's really not that hard. Let me just give a primer out here. For those that don't know and want to learn this wonderful game, when you play Texas Hold'em, which is the rage, by the way, I was talking about when I was a kid, we used to have dealer call their own game. We played 1,000 different games. Now all I play with my friends is Texas Hold'em tournament style. As far as I'm concerned, it's about the only good thing that came out of Texas. But okay, it's a great game. And what it is everyone gets two cards down, and then there's a round of betting, and then there's something called the flop, and the dealer turns up three cards that are in everybody's hand. So it makes for an interesting game. You're sharing the three cards in the middle, and then you got your two cards that only you see. There's a bet, there's a fourth card, there's a fifth card, and then there's a final bet, and then the winner takes the rest. So what Jay is saying is that Daniel Negreanu, before he even got to the second, third, fourth round of betting, he already knew what Jay had in his hand. He's an amazing poker player. How does he do that?
He just has this ability to look at you and know from your face what your cards are.
I'd wear a hood,
I think,
if I were with Daniel Negreanu. How about a ski mask?
It was mind-boggling. I mean, he did it time after time after time, and he was never wrong.
Yeah, that's scary. I wouldn't want to put money against Daniel Negreanu. I take it you got
That's one of the reasons I think that online poker has seen the explosion that it's seen, and Texas Hold'em home games especially, is because you and I, no matter how much we practice, no matter how good we get, if we were to go one-on-one against Michael Jordan, if we were to play heads-up against Tiger Woods,
we wouldn't stand a chance. Right,
but
poker, there's enough luck.
On any given day, you or I could sit down against a Doyle Brunson or a Greg Raymer or a Daniel Negreanu, and we could beat them at a game of Texas Hold'em. And that's the difference.
It is amazing.
So let me finish my story. So
go ahead.
So I'm at this final table. I've got Daniel to my left. I've got Greg to my right. Daniel is short-stacked, so he decides
Hold on. You can't use the lingo without explaining what it means. What's short-stacked?
Okay. Daniel had the smallest number of chips still left at the table.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, so Greg Raymer is big-stacked. He's got more chips than anybody. And I'm somewhere in the middle. So anyway,
okay.
Daniel gets dealt. He gets dealt, we come to find out later, a queen and a four. And he goes off.
Bad hand. Terrible hand.
Bad hand. But again, he had no choice because he didn't have any money left. So he had to go all in, or he would probably just lose it on the blinds.
Okay, so the point is, again, I'm just translating for the people who don't know poker lingo, that at this point when you have very few chips left, you've got to put a whole bunch of chips in automatically. That's what the blinds are. And the fear is that if you don't take a stand and bet at some point, eventually just the forced bets it will make you lose. So what Jay is exactly. saying is Daniel Ugrano had to basically bet it all or just risk losing piece by piece.
Exactly.
So go ahead, what happened?
So why not just go for it? So everybody folds. Until it gets around to Greg, who's got the most chips. Greg goes all in. Come to find out he's got pocket jacks, a pair of jacks. Everybody folds around to me. I'm on the button, so I'm the last person. And I look at my cards, and I have ace-king suited.
Very good hand.
So I have to call. I mean, there's no way that I could throw away ace-king suited. And again, I have no idea what Negreanu and Raymer have. But, I figure what the hell. The worst that can happen is I lose and I have a great story to tell.
And that's a 50-50 chance, Jax versus
exactly.
Ace-King.
Well, actually, at this point, Raymer's favored to win.
But only by a little bit.
Raymer's favored. So, anyway, I go all in. And because Raymer is the only one who has any chips left, we all three turn up our cards and discover what each of us have. The dealer flops the first three cards, and I get two of the cards that I need to give me the nut flush.
Okay.
Nut flush being that I have the ace, and so if I have a flush and the ace is the highest card in that flush, nobody else can beat me.
Right.
Now I'm favored to win. Even though Greg has a pair of jacks, I'm now favored to win because I'm four cards into a nut flush, plus I have the two over cards, the ace and the king.
Right.
The river, the turn is a dead card. The river's a dead card. Daniel and I lose to Greg.
So you both lose at the same time, which means you get second place.
Well, actually, yeah. Well, no, because there were a couple of people still left at the table.
Oh, all right.
I actually wound up coming in like fifth or sixth because everybody else folded.
But you beat Daniel Negreanu.
Well, I tied Daniel Negreanu.
Well, you had more chips. You beat him. Come on, take it. Enjoy it. Do your little victory lap there.
Well, okay.
I mean, that's a pretty cool thing.
Yes.
I'll tell you, it's one of the things that poker really does do is it brings, when I used to play online, I'd play with people from Australia and Canada, and every now and then we'd even stick a little bit of politics there in the chat room as we're going on. And it's funny, it's interesting, there's all kinds of poker players, and part of poker is, beyond the math and beyond the luck, it's reading people and thinking, okay, this young guy is probably going to be a little more aggressive, a little more risky, than this older woman who will probably be more careful and having to read people. Do you think you're better at reading people outside of poker when you play a lot of poker?
Actually, I think you would be. I think that's one of the advantages that online poker players have and just poker players in general have is that they're very good at seeing things that the average person doesn't see, at reading people, at getting an instant sense of who a person is.
So it's a social game. Actually, again, better than horse racing. Sorry, those who supported that law. Horse racing, I don't know. I mean, it's fun, I guess, to sit out and watch the horses go around. But if you do it online, I don't know. It's not as much of a social game. You're not working to understand people as you are when you're playing poker. Let me ask you this. Let's say we had a bunch of by the way, I played last night at the Take Back America conference. There were a bunch of us sitting around, and we started up a poker game. It was a lot of fun. If we had like a bunch of horn listeners who wanted to set up a game, can you get a group of people who are all over the country and want to play with just each other? Can that happen online?
Of course. Just about every online poker site offers that. They let you create your own online tournament. And you would give out passwords or something else to each person that only they would know, and that would only give them access to that game. So basically, you create your own online tournament and say the password is 12345. So you email that to all your buddies, and you say, you know, come to Poker Stars at 7 p.m. Monday night, and go to the lobby, and it'll say Jimmy's Poker Tournament. Click on that, punch in your password, and you'll be seated at the table. And only those people with that password get seated.
Now, here's what I'm trying to understand.
That's one of the great things about online poker is, you know, you can live hundreds or thousands of miles away from each other, and you can still play poker with each other. I mean, you could be disabled.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you could be disabled, you could be unable to walk, and you could live in a small town in Nebraska, and you could play poker with someone in New York City and someone in Australia at the same time. It's amazing.
That's right. And again, that's the sad part of the UIGEA, Mark, is that the person who you're describing, who doesn't have the wherewithal to go to the brick-and-mortar casino, who doesn't have the wherewithal to open a bank account in Canada or the EU, who doesn't have the ability to fund his online poker account, can't do that. You know, he can't get in his car and drive to the casino because he can't.
Well, Jay, there are
hundreds of thousands of people in this country who are stuck in their homes for whatever reason. You know, they're bedridden. They're in a wheelchair. They're obese.
Right. They're veterans who've lost limbs.
They're shut-ins. They're blind. Whatever the reason is, you know, they don't want to leave their house or they can't leave their house. They're in the middle of nowhere and they don't have transportation. That's what the Internet does. I mean, that's what the Internet is for, so that you can get on your computer and you can interact with people around the world. And, you know, Bob Goodlatte and John Kyle and Bill Frist and Jim Leach and all the other Republicans that passed the UIGEA never took those people into consideration.
Jay, how many people, how many Americans, but let's say before this law passed, are playing Internet poker?
The estimate I got was between 8 and 10 million Americans.
Okay, 8 and 10 million Americans. Now, one of the things that I am involved in, both, you know, politically when I used to work on the Hill and actually here on the Head On Radio Network, is building a grassroots movement. Heck, if Obama can do it, we can do it too. 8 to 10 million Americans, it seems to me, of every age and gender and race and political views, it seems to me that if they all band together, and plenty of them have substantial sums of money, they could help elect people to get this law overturned. How are you doing at making that political movement?
I mean, they already have. I mean, the Poker Players Alliance, which is pokerplayersalliance.org, has over a million members. Al D'Amato is the chairman of the board. But Mark, you as a lawyer know that it's almost impossible to overturn a bill once it's passed. The average bill takes about 5 years to overturn, and it's not just people, you know, forming a grassroots committee and lobbying their senator or congressman. I mean, it doesn't work that way.
Well, I would argue it partly works that way. It requires two things. One, it definitely is lobbying.
Let's look at something similar to the UIGEA. Let's look at prohibition.
Yeah, that took 19 years.
When did prohibition take place, and when did it get overturned?
1914 and 1933, I think. Maybe it was 1919 and 1933. I think it's about 14 years.
What did it take for prohibition to be abolished in America?
Well, it took a huge uprising, but I'll tell you this, Jay.
Didn't it take a constitutional amendment?
Yes, but the thing is, prohibition began with a constitutional amendment. So it was harder to overturn, but that's because it was in our Constitution. The 18th Amendment to the Constitution banned alcohol, and then the 21st Amendment repealed it. So it's actually, just so we don't think it's too hard for people, this would just require a law passed by the House and the Senate, signed by the President. Not that that's easy, but that's a lot easier than a constitutional amendment, which requires two-thirds of both houses
of
Congress.
You're absolutely right. But the problem is that we're talking about a gambling law. And, you know, it's not like Megan's Law. It's not like, you know, something that everybody can get behind. There are aspects of gambling that a lot of people are opposed to in this country, and so it's almost impossible to get everybody to agree on it. And that's why the UIGEA is going to be so difficult to get overturned. I mean, Barney Frank is trying to do it, and God bless him for it, and hopefully, you know, he'll be able to get somewhere with his Internet Gambling Regulation and Enforcement Act. And I think one of the things that probably has a better likelihood of happening is the organization IMEGA, which is the Interactive Media, Entertainment, and Gaming Association, recently challenged the constitutionality of the UIGEA. They went in front of Judge Cooper out of U.S. District Court of New Jersey back in September, and pleaded their case. Cooper, about 2 weeks ago, came out and granted IMEGA standing, and they are going to now go to the Third District Court of Appeals in the Northeast and see if they can get the UIGEA overturned.
Jay, now, do you know what their argument is? What's their constitutional argument?
Their constitutional argument, you know, that is a great question. I've never been asked that. I do not know.
I'll have to read their brief.
Their site is imega.org.
Okay, I'll check out their briefs. I'll tell you, I obviously have no problem with the court battle, but I would encourage you folks, and this is what we do, I guess. This is what activists do. I've encouraged many times people here in the Horn and wherever I'm on the radio and on television to pick up the phone to call their member of Congress. I know the number by heart, 202-225-3121. That gets you to whatever senator or representative you have. I don't want you to give up, Jay, on old-fashioned retail lobbying, and not necessarily by, you know, huge, K Street lobbyists, but simply by ordinary Americans. You can do ads on radio, on television, and you can convince people to do the right thing. I don't want you to give up on that strategy.
Okay.
Well, good. No, because I think it's important. We've done that before. You know, there was an uprising, for example, on this foreign intelligence surveillance bill that I and many radio hosts across the country were talking about. We didn't want the president spying on us without a warrant, and it looked like we were dead in the water, and lo and behold, the Democrats stood firm, and that didn't happen. I guess my question is, if we were to get this through Congress, and I have to tell you, this shouldn't be a partisan thing. Yes, many of the supporters of this internet ban were Republican. There were some Democrats, unfortunately, who supported it too. But there are many, many Republicans who are libertarian and would want this overturned. My question, I guess, is President Bush signed the bill. He seems to support the ban. Is that right?
Well, you see, we have no way of knowing, Mark, because what the president signed was the Safe Ports Act.
Right, right. Which everyone agreed we needed.
You realize here, you know, when you start throwing around how Democrats were behind this as well and Democrats supported this as well, that, you know, that is not really truthful. I mean, it was mainly it was Republicans that wrote it. It was Republicans
you're right.
That supported it. I mean, the only good Republican in this entire story, as far as I'm concerned, is our very good Senator John Warner, who was presented this bill by Bill Frist days before the Safe Ports Act. Bill Frist went to Warner and said, I want you to attach this to the Armed Forces Bill. And Warner told him to go pound sand. Warner said,
yeah, no, you're right, Jay. I want to be clear. It was the great majority of Republicans. It was about three quarters or more Republicans,
and
about one quarter Democrats.
So I'd also like to, you know, set the record straight and let the listeners know that every act, every bill currently being written, discussed, going through committees on Capitol Hill has been written and sponsored by Democrats. So you've got all these Republicans that wrote and passed the UIGEA, and you've got all these Democrats trying to get it abolished. You know, the bottom line is that the Democrats are the ones that don't care whether you play poker in the privacy of your living room. It's the Republicans that don't want you to do it.
I wonder if we can't start creating coalitions. One of the things that I always look to do is how to expand the Democratic majority. And I look, for example, at the fervent Republican supporters of Ron Paul. And they're about, I don't know, maybe even 10% of the Republican Party calls themselves libertarian. And there's nothing that offends a libertarian more than the government trying to be a nanny state and tell you what to do. And I think that we could grab a lot of those people in a coalition. I'd be curious to know if you have approached either the Obama or the Clinton campaign to get their views on this issue.
Actually, I believe that there have been people that have gone to those campaigns to get their opinion on this, and they're really pretty mum about it. I mean, it's just not on the radar as far as they're concerned. And for most Americans, Mark, it's not on the radar. I mean, again, there are only, you know, 10 million or so people that are playing poker on the Internet, and the people that are playing poker online are basically young white males that aren't exactly famous for going out and campaigning for their candidate and voting. I mean,
see, I think we could build a movement.
I mean, the reason that horse racing got carved out is because when you go to a racetrack, the average person there is 70 years old.
You're right.
You know?
But
I mean, you know, I've been going to racetracks since I was 5 years old. My father would take me to Charlestown and Shenandoah Downs, and you know, everybody there was, you know, an old white guy.
That's
you know, those
true.
Are the guys that go out and vote.
That's true. I'll tell you though, I think Barack Obama has shown that the youth will get out there when they care about something. And I think poker just needs to raise its visibility. I think people, even people who don't play poker, can understand the basic point, which is government shouldn't be deciding which games you play. I mean, just like it shouldn't be deciding who you marry or what you do with your own body or what God you pray to or what books you read. That's not what we do here in America. It shouldn't be deciding what games you play. You know, leave us alone. If you want to, I don't know, ban somebody from spending half their net worth on a game, you know, I could maybe understand that, but that's not where the vast majority of people are. The vast majority of people are simply playing a game because they enjoy it. That's what I do.
I mean, they didn't, you know, put Bill Bennett in jail for blowing $8 million on slot machines. You know,
no, they
something that
they sure didn't.
Something that I want your listeners to know about, and you may have some insight into this, being that you're a lawyer. Are you familiar with a gentleman named David Carruthers?
I'm not.
Okay. David Carruthers was the CEO of the online gambling company Bet on Sports, a publicly traded company in the UK. Again, David Carruthers, CEO, publicly traded company, everything perfectly legal and legitimate. He gets on a plane. He has a layover at Dallas on his way to Costa Rica. He and his wife get off the plane in Dallas, July 16th, 2006, over a year and a half ago, Mark. He's arrested on charges related to his role as CEO of that publicly traded company in the UK. Since that date, July 16th, 2006, he has been under house arrest in a hotel in St. Louis awaiting a trial date.
Wait, what's his crime?
His crime is that he was the CEO of a sports betting company in the UK.
Why and how can the United States punish him for that?
Because sports betting is illegal in the U.S.
So he did it in the U.K., but I guess there were some Americans that... But wait, but sports betting is legal
They took U.S. customers.
And
U.S. sports... U.S. customers, U.S. citizens, were able to sign up for Bet on Sports on their laptop. They were able to send them money through their bank and bet on sports on their computer, which is illegal in America. You cannot bet on sports in America, from what I understand, or at least you can
transfer money
or something.
I hear politicians. I hear John McCain. I mean, I hear the president of the United States. It seems like I all the time they're joking about I bet on the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Super
Bowl.
But they don't
say money. They say like a steak dinner.
Is that legal?
You know, it's not money. My understanding is if you say, you know, like I'll see, you know, Bill O'Reilly make a bet with Dennis Miller on Fox News, and they'll bet who buys dinner.
Well, I can't think of how stupid that is. You could bet a steak dinner, but you can't bet $20. I mean, everybody I know bets on the Super Bowl. What?
Everybody
who doesn't
does.
Bet on the
I mean, every,
Super Bowl?
Every,
how can you enjoy
every
the show?
Office? Every office in America has a pool. The bottom line is that there is a British citizen sitting under house arrest for over a year and a half. He still doesn't even have a trial date, and his crime is something that is perfectly legal in the country where he lives, and the company is publicly traded on the FTSE. Now imagine, if you will, Bill Gates gets on a plane, lands at Heathrow. And the British police decide that what Bill Gates is doing in America is illegal in the UK, and they arrest him and throw him in jail. Now, what would America's response to that be?
We would be up in arms.
We would be launching missiles in a couple of hours, and we'd be having hourly updates on Fox News.
Well, I don't know about the missiles,
I mean,
we'd be angry.
I just can't understand how this guy, David Carruthers, and your listeners are welcome to Google him, two R's, how David Carruthers is sitting in a hotel room with a bracelet around his leg. He can't leave the room, and nobody knows about it. I mean, why?
Yeah,
how is it possible
right.
that we're not reading about this? That the ambassador, the British ambassador, isn't showing up at the White House every day, demanding that their citizen be released.
You know, I'm amazed
that figure this out. I cannot understand how this goes on in America. You can have a British citizen who does something that's perfectly legal in his country, land here, and be arrested, and over 18 months later not even have a trial date, and nobody even knows about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues there. One is the extraterritoriality of U.S. laws. I'm just as a lawyer, I sort of break down the issues. And you want to keep that as minimal as possible. Maybe you want to have an extraterritorial law about genocide, but not one on sports betting. The other one, of course, is how long it takes to get to trial. You have a right as an American citizen to demand a speedy trial. I don't know what a UK citizen in St. Louis has. I've never, defended a foreigner imprisoned in American soil. And then there's the third issue, the one you're absolutely right about, and that is the people not knowing about it. I would hope, though, that you at Poker Source Online, and I mean 8 to 10 million internet poker players, that ain't chump change. That's one out of every 30 Americans. I can think of some ethnic groups that have smaller numbers than that. That's a huge force. And let me suggest to you that a good old retail politics and lobbying, you need a pack. You got to get some ads on. You got to get people knowing about this issue so that they can march and defend your rights. I'm afraid you're going to have to do some old-fashioned politics here.
I mean, what's really sad, Mark, is that, a guy like Mumia, somebody who, kills a police officer,
yeah,
gets more publicity and gets more support than some, poor schmo whose only crime is that he was the CEO of a sports gambling company.
See, I think, though, the poker world does have a certain... just like, any group, of any ethnic group or any political group, there's definitely a strong social aspect. Why can't the World Series of Poker give $1 from each? I mean, they're paying $10,000 a person. $1 of each going to a Free Carruthers campaign or going to going to an overturn the anti-internet poker law campaign. I mean, poker players, they love their game. They got lots of money. They've got many of them have lots of time. I think you're going to have to go the lobbying route. What do you think?
Well, like I said, that's what iMega is.
Yeah, I think it has to be.
The Interactive Media Entertainment and Gaming Association is a group of K Street lawyers that are lobbying on behalf of the online poker community. And as far as the World Series of Poker is concerned, they have enough. They don't want anything to do with online poker, Mark.
Oh yeah, they're the competitor.
Right.
I didn't think about that.
In fact, they banned. I mean, it used to be that the moneymakers, the Ramers of the world, all got their seats by playing satellites at online poker rooms.
Right. Right. I remember that. They don't do that anymore.
No, they can't do it anymore because the World Series of Poker and Harrah's said that they can no longer do that. The person has to be there in person and has to buy the ticket himself at the window in order to be in the World Series of Poker. It used to be that the online poker rooms, like Poker Stars, for instance, would just go to Harrah's and say, here's $1 million, give me, 100 seats, or whatever, it was that they did. Well, now they can't do that anymore, and so now when you win a seat online to the World Series of Poker, the poker room has no guarantee that you'll even go to Las Vegas.
As I recall...
They give you the money and say, okay, here's the money, now... please go to Las Vegas. Please, we'd really like you to. But if the person doesn't want to do that, they don't
crazy.
Know.
Crazy. As I recall, the thing that really started the huge poker boom in America was Moneymaker's win. This is a guy, Chris Moneymaker, who was a just a guy. He wasn't a professional poker player or anything. And he got there by playing online, right? And he just won a game online that paid $5. I mean, how much did he pay?
Yeah, he parlayed like $5 or $10 on PokerStars into a $10,000 buy-in at the World Series of Poker, and then parlayed that into winning $6 or $7 million.
That's pretty good odds. That's pretty good. I mean, return on your money, $6 million for $5.
That was the start. I mean, most people point to that as the moment. It was like the perfect storm. You had all of these young people discovering online poker. You had everybody tuning in to the Discovery Channel because of that little pinpoint camera that showed you the whole cards. You had this young guy who came out of nowhere and was up against, you know, one of the world's greatest poker players and bluffed him out and won the World Series of Poker. And after that, it was like, well, heck, if Chris Moneymaker can do it, I can do it.
And the stat is,
you had all these high school kids and all these college kids suddenly playing poker every night of the week.
And the sad thing is, you can't do that anymore. I mean, $10,000 to get into the World Series of Poker is a pretty hefty outlay, and you don't want
people. The bottom
people...
line to me, Mark, is if you're Chris Moneymaker and you know you're this young schmoo, you know, and you're an accountant and you know you like to play poker on the internet, and somebody hands you $10,000 and says, okay, now go to Las Vegas with this and buy a seat. I can almost guarantee you that if that were today, Chris Moneymaker would have put that $10,000, you know, as a down payment on a car.
Probably.
He wouldn't have gone to Las Vegas.
You know, $5, the romance, I guess, of parlaying $5 into $6 million. I mean, it's a different game. It's a very different thing because, yeah, I'll pay $5 for the chance to win $6 million. I may not pay $10,000. So it's sad that they've done this.
That's why pre-online poker, you know, the biggest turnout at the World Series of Poker was, you know, like a couple hundred people because there's only a couple hundred people that would put down $10,000. But when online poker started taking off and the online poker room started giving away seats and started purchasing seats, the tournament went to 8,000. Last year was the first year in the history of the World Series of Poker that attendance actually went down. And the reason it went down is because the UIGEA was passed, U.S. players could no longer play online, and the online poker rooms could no longer purchase seats.
When is America going to learn?
You know,
We had the prohibition in the 1920s. There are drug liberalization laws. I, for one, think that drugs like marijuana could be decriminalized, and not that I have never smoked a joint. But to me, it's all about freedom. And when you look at things like prohibition, and you see that they don't work, you're trying to stop Americans from doing things that have fun. Frankly, I would decriminalize a lot of prostitution, too. Elliot Spitzer might like that. The point is when you have these victimless crimes, And then you have something like gambling, which is so much less of a problem than alcohol abuse or drinking and driving or prostitution or marijuana or any of it. It's just people. Yes, it can be abused. Anything can be abused. You can eat too much and get a heart attack. But at the end of the day, when are we going to respect Americans' freedom? And I'm amazed. I'm always amazed that the same Republican Party that claims they want to get the government out of our lives is busy putting the government in our lives, and I would hope all those young white male voters, I guess the ones who are busy playing pokers, if that's the main demographic that poker is, they are people we need in our Democratic Party. And I think by carrying this banner of freedom, this banner of protecting Americans' right to simply have fun, we can gather 8 or 10 million new voters in the Democratic Party and come on in and elect somebody like Barack Obama who understands we have real problems facing America, and internet gambling isn't one of them. Jay Lakin, thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop.
Mark, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Tomorrow I'm going to be talking about Barack Obama. We're going to go into his fantastic speech on race and all the details of it. I think he found a way to take a knuckleball and hit it out of the park. And you'll have to just stay tuned in for that tomorrow right here on the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine signing off.